The next case is United States v. Stephen Wainwright. Mr. McCabe.
May it please the court and Mr. Connell. I bring this issue to the court about a primacy of the statute versus the sentencing guidelines. And I have brought to your attention two district court cases that are in my favor on this interpretation, as well as the Ninth Circuit case of Stevens. And I've also brought to your attention the 11th Circuit case, which has been seriously questioned, that being the Morton case. Now, Your Honors, in some ways this is a simple issue, in some ways it's a complicated issue, because as you compare these cases, even the Morton case, talks about a different area of the guidelines. I still call it into question because ultimately I think the issue still becomes, is the statute trumping the guidelines? And I think this is really the central issue I present to this court for consideration.
Let me ask you this, Mr.
Sure.
McCabe. This statute doesn't itself have a section about attempt, at least as I see it. But one of the arguments the government has made is that you could come up with the same sentence that Mr. Wainwright got by simply showing that he attempted to commit the offense of distribution that he was convicted of. And if you work your way through the attempt sentencing guidelines, trying here to distinguish sentencing from underlying conviction, it seems to me they're right. You go to 2X1.1, that's the attempt guideline. You come up with the base at the adjusted offense level of 32. He certainly had done everything he thought was necessary to complete the offense, even if the person wasn't a minor. Maybe it was a sting, maybe it was something else, maybe it was just a misunderstanding. And that leaves you with the 32. So even if you're right that there's some discrepancy between the statute and the guidelines, I'm not sure that that's like trumping the statute. Isn't that simply a reflection of sentencing policy?
Well, Judge Wood, I would respectfully disagree on a number of issues. That was flatly rejected in the Stevens case. There was a dissent that spoke of, in fact, I think the government, frankly, probably took that dissent from Stevens in their brief that the Ninth Circuit wrote about. But essentially, there's 3 points to which I raise in my brief, and I bring another to the attention of this court. Number one is that statute specifically had attempt within it. The statute we're dealing with today, it does not have attempt. Second of all, as I brought forth in my brief, the distribution to a minor, the sentencing guideline, doesn't have the word attempt in it. And the third point is that, let's see here.
But there's a whole separate guideline for attempts.
Yes, Your Honor.
2X1.1. So there are a lot of guidelines that don't have attempt in them because the guidelines have already taken care of that thought.
Well, again, I think you have to look at the conviction that he had, which doesn't incorporate attempt, because that's where this Ninth Circuit dissent was coming from. And that's where you get this Meek case that came before the Stevens case. And then the Meek case, which the government is relying upon, they're talking about attempt, but that statute had the word attempt. I think that
there's no problem with the underlying conviction here because he pleads guilty, right?
Yes,
He could have preserved an argument that he, in fact, had not committed the crime by not pleading guilty and going to trial, but he pleads guilty, so he's admitting that he has done some distribution to minors, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so we really are only talking about sentencing at this point.
But there's two issues here that kind of get muddied together, and one is the damage to minors because you have possession of material that depicts minors. And then the other issue, which really is the issue before this court today, is did you distribute it to a minor? So you've got the depiction of minors, and then you've got did it get distributed to minors? And the concern that I'm trying to present to this court and that's come up in these cases is what does the statute say? And the statute is defining a minor specifically as somebody under the age of 18. And the guidelines are stretching that. And no matter whether you look at the old guideline of 2003 or you look at the new guideline of 2004, it's very clear they're trying to extend the definition of the statute by incorporating something that doesn't exist within the statute. And the best example, of course, is presented by these courts is the police officer.
Well, they're the sting cases. The government also argues, though, that in the plea proceeding that Mr. Wainwright agrees with the government that he used his computer to email a visual depiction of a minor engaged in sexually explicit conduct. Isn't that pertinent here? He admits it.
Mr. Wainwright admitted that he used a computer.
To email, I mean, email is a form of distribution, isn't it?
Yes, but he makes no admission. In fact, if you look at the change of plea proceeding, the only thing that the government presented the facts, and the government in their presentation of the facts that he emailed it to a person. That's as far as they ever got with it, was just simply to a person. Never described who that person was. Of course, Mr. Wainwright actually didn't know. Certainly the record reflects that he believed it was an individual under the age of 18, but the record, we simply don't know.
But I'm just questioning whether he preserved, once he decides to plead guilty, whether it's now kind of too late for him to say that, because he's told about the statute to which he's pleading guilty.
And the statute says nothing about who you are sending it to. The whole issue about who you're sending it to comes forth in this sentencing guideline to give a 5-point enhancement. But the statute itself says nothing about attempt. The statute itself says nothing about who you're sending it to. The statute is concerned about what are you sending, not who you're sending it to. It's this guideline that hops onto another bandwagon about let's punish the person even more if they're sending it to an individual that's actually indeed a minor. And that's, I think, the big concern here. I see my rebuttal time's coming up, so I will...
Okay. Mr. Connell?
Good morning again. I'm Paul Connell for the United States. I was responsible for the prosecution of the defendant below. Before I explain why there's no plain error here, I just want to note we are actually abandoning our attempt argument, and we're not going to rely on that, Your Honor. And we're also not going to rely on the argument in our brief regarding the expansion of the definition to include undercover police officers would capture this upon resentencing. So setting that aside, there was no objection to the pre-sentence report in this case. We're here on plain error. The defendant can't show error in this case. There is a foundation for the district court to have found that that 5-level adjustment should apply. I would direct the court's attention to paragraph 14 of the pre-sentence report. The defendant in that paragraph is found to have distributed a sexually explicit image to a person who goes by the screen name of Justified Facade -16YO. The 16YO portion of that screen name indicates that person is 16 years old.
How do we know that?
It could be Judge Bauer.
Yeah, no way.
I think and Judge Bauer.
Let's pick another judge, but
I know exactly where you're going, Your Honor. The district court's entitled to rely on the information in the pre-sentence report that's not objected to, as well as any reasonable inference,
How would the pre-sentence report preparer know what that meant?
I would think it's just common knowledge, Your Honor, that -16YO.
That somebody uses a blog on 16BO, it's a minor? How would they know that?
I just didn't hear you.
What common sense tells you that this sort of a signature is somebody that's a minor?
The answer to that is because when the defendant pleads guilty, I turn over my entire file to the pre-sentence report writer, and she looks at the actual discovery, including the chat fragments from the AOL discussion back and forth.
Right.
That not only, so the person's screen name alone doesn't do it, but the context of the conversations between.
What besides the name does it?
The chatting back and forth, as well as the fact
that chatting between
the defendant and this person.
Ah.
And the fact that within these chat fragments.
In that chat, the guy says, I'm under 18. What does he say?
As well as, Your Honor, within these chat fragments, they're using a web camera back and forth so they can see each other. Now, that's outside the record, but that was provided to the pre-sentence report writer. That's why she wrote the pre-sentence report the way she did, and that's why there was no objection by the defendant, because he knew that the five-level adjustment applied.
Ah, but there's nothing in the record to indicate this.
Besides the way the pre-sentence report
was
written.
Well, you snuck up on me, I'll say that.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
I say you snuck up on me, I'll say that. Okay. I thought the record was supposed to disclose what we were reviewing, but I mean...
Well, that's a problem. You're right. It's unobjected to, though. There's no without an objection by the defense.
If there had been no objection to some statement by the government that the world was flat, I still wouldn't have to accept that.
Be that as it may, Your Honor, the defendant.
Why wouldn't those so-called chat fragments be part of the record? Why is it just because it's not in controversy?
That's correct.
And so they accept the fact that he was. Commiserating, is it literally face-to-face in this, whatever you call it?
Your Honor, it is outside the record. I'm happy to read some of this to you if you'd like.
It's outside the record because nobody objected. So I'm just asking outside the record what they didn't object to, so I know that's what it is. But that this was a conversation, whatever, and people can see each other's image.
That's correct. That is what is plainly obvious from the discovery that was provided to the defense. I mean, he had it. He also had access to, if he wanted, when the search was done at his home and these computers were seized, we take the hard drives, but he has access to them if he wants them.
We're on the same page. It is my understanding now that the complaint that is before us is that there is nothing in the statute that permits the increase based on the age of the person getting it. Am I correct in that? So that the age is nothing to it. That's a different issue altogether.
No, Your Honor, the defendant has made an argument that he believes that the guideline in place that he was used to be sentenced under the 2003 sentencing guideline for a five-level adjustment for distributing sexually explicit materials to a minor is broader than
the statute
definition
itself
found in 18 U.S.C. 2256 of a minor. But the way I read distribution to a minor, it just reads here, means the knowing distribution to an individual who is a minor at the time of the offense, knowing or believing the individual is a minor at that time.
Are you quoting now from the guidelines or are you quoting from the...
I just read right from the 2003 manual used to sentence the defendant.
Of the guidelines?
Yes. Yeah.
And his beef is that the guidelines themselves go beyond the act that makes it a crime. His attack is on the guidelines, not on he admitting that he knew it was a minor. Where could he put a place where the guidelines can go past the statute itself?
And I don't think the guidelines do go past the statute.
Well, that's the issue I thought was before us, and that's what I wanted to know.
Okay. Did I answer your question, Judge Bauer? Okay.
Yeah.
Let me turn quickly to the third prong. It is the defendant's burden to show actual prejudice when he's on plain air. He can't do it here. Again, through the discovery, the defendant had access to all the information supporting the enhancement. If he thought the enhancement was erroneous
Mr. Connell, if we vacated this sentence, would Mr. Wainwright be resentenced under the 2006 guidelines?
That's the law of the circuit, Your Honor.
Right. He would actually be worse off if he wins.
It is advisory.
At risk of being worse off.
I think the real specific point I want to hone in here before my time runs out is, forget about whether he would get the five levels for distribution to a minor. He would, as the PSR just sits and reads paragraph 14, he would get a five-level adjustment for distribution for receipt or expectation of a receipt of a thing of value, but not for pecuniary gain. He would just get a five-level. We could just basically go back for resentencing and say, Your Honor, forget about distribution to a minor and proving that it was a minor and that he knew it was a minor. As written, paragraph 14, he would just get five levels.
The same five levels.
We end up in the same place. Unless there are other questions for me from the court, I would just ask you to affirm the judgment conviction. Thank you.
Mr. McCabe?
Thank you. I guess I'd like to hit on Judge Wood's question, and that is I do think that we are protected under North Carolina versus Pierce if we go back down. I don't believe that the judge has the authority to give a worse sentence than we already received, and I think we got protection because we can't get retaliatory sentencing by going back down. And so I want to discourage this court from thinking about just affirming because the court thinks we're going to get a worse sentence. I don't believe that a new guideline can now be brought up before the district judge that wasn't brought up before, and I don't believe that the judge can go ahead and retaliate against my client and give some other, you know, the, can't use the 2004 guidelines, because obviously in this case the 2003 guidelines were used, and as this court, and I know Judge Bauer, you sat on that case, the case that this was at the U.S. Supreme Court but was rejected apparently in June about the application of guidelines not being ex post facto anymore. And so I do believe that we have protection if we go back down, and I would respectfully ask that you honor that North Carolina versus Pierce doctrine in your consideration of this case. I believe that the authority I've presented to you is quite strong in that the statute should trump the guidelines. And also this court has said some really nice commentary, which I presented, where even if a commentary is in disagreement with the guidelines, there's also a problem. So we've got a three-tier process. We've got the statute, we've got the guideline, and then we've got the commentary to the guidelines. And this court has said that if the commentary is in disagreement with the guideline, which in this case it is, because all we have is distribution to a minor, and then we have a definition of a minor, and then we got these commentaries which expand upon that. Mm-hmm. We've also got the commentary which is in disagreement with the statute. And when the government proceeds to discuss with you distribution to a minor, all they're doing is quoting a commentary. And Judge Bauer made a very good point that's my whole issue. It's in conflict with the statute. I mean, you can't sit up here and cite a commentary if you're going to try to attack me on the issue of the statute being in conflict with the commentary. So I really respectfully ask that this court look at this issue seriously. It's been universally adopted now in two federal district courts. I think the Ulis decision is very illustrative of how the approach should go. I think the Morton case, as I discussed earlier, has been subject to attack, and the Ninth Circuit and Stenson really took attack on it as well as the district judge in Ulis. And so also the Morton case, I think, is off point. It's discussing exploitation of a minor. This case isn't about exploitation of a minor. This case is about distribution to a minor and who, in fact, we're distributing to. And I see my red light is on. If I could just lastly say that as far as the record goes, I think it's inappropriate to be discussing issues not before this court. The record is the record. The PSR reflects what's before this court, and I don't think we should be discussing videotapes or cam tapes that I don't even have access to because I was not trial counsel, and I think we should stick with the record. Thank you.
You can go back and look at them.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Thanks to both counsel. And the case will be taken under advisement.